Mohawk News Radio 1180 WHAM proudly welcomes you to America's longest-running computer show, Soundbites. Call the show at 222-1180, star 1180, a free call for Verizon Wireless subscribers, or the One Communications line at 1-800-295-1180. Now alongside Steve Ray and Dave Enright, here's Nick Francesco on 50,000-watt 1180 WHAM.
Good morning, Mr. and Mrs. America, all the chips in the PC. It is Sunday, the 11th of November, Anno Domini 2007, and you lucky people, you're listening to Soundbites. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
I'm Steve Ray.
I'm Chris Reich.
And I'm Jessica Sawyer.
And at 10 minutes after the hour, we are Soundbites. Now, before we get to the phones, I suppose everybody would like me to start up the chat, so I'll be doing that as I talk. I just can't walk and chew gum simultaneously, so it takes me a while to get started.
That's what you said before.
Yes, we've said it before, and it remains true. Okay, we're in. All right. Now, here's the most important thing. I know those of you who do not catch the start of the show, we may have to repeat this later. But the Siemens Company has a contest to give away an MRI machine. Now, you don't care because you're not going to have an MRI machine in your home.
I want one in my home now.
I do. I do now. However, the Lockport Memorial Hospital is in the running for this. So if you would do all of the folks in Lockport a favor, go to winanmri.com. That's winanmri.com. Click on the link for the Lockport Hospital. You may have to sort by popularity because they're number two on the list right now. And watch the short video. Click on that. Watch the short video. It's a minute long or whatever. And then the little orange vote light will light up, and you can click on the vote, and hopefully Lockport will get enough votes to win an MRI machine. Now, here's the thing. You can vote once a day per machine. Well, actually, per IP address. We just went through that here. but you can vote once a day per IP address. So from home, you probably only get one vote a day, but you could also vote from work if you've got two machines at work, if you've got the web on your cell phone, whatever that's all about. Watch the video and vote every single day for the Lockport Hospital video. Watch the 1 minute video, click the button every day through the end of the year. And hopefully we can get the deserving folks at Lockport and all the 80,000 people who live around Lockport an MRI machine. So that would be, they don't have to come to Buffalo or Rochester or whatever in order to get one. So that's winanmri.com. I'm sure that's already up on the link list.
Yeah, it will be in a moment. I'm watching the video now.
there you go.
When I was in college, and even before then, my dad worked 40 years at Kodak, and so he got a lot of Kodak's test machines donated to Roberts College, where I went.
Right.
And so with our mass spectrometer and gas chromatograph, all these cool machines, you know, from the 50s and 60s, because when they got old in the 70s and 80s, they replaced them.
Right.
So then my physics professor was showing us his doctoral thesis from Berkeley, and it was all the same equipment. So our physics lab at in college in the 80s was just as good as Berkeley's was in the 60s. I'm sure they have all new stuff now.
Yeah, right. Well, you hope so.
I've been out of college for 20 years. That hurts.
Right. So vote. So go vote right now. Why wait? You all know you're sitting next to your computers listening to sound bites anyway. Let's go right to the phones. I think we've got time for a caller or a couple. Our first caller is Bruce from Rochester, New York. Welcome, Bruce. What's your question?
I bought a new computer locally, which I'm very happy with. The only problem I have is that I want to add a DVD burner on, and I can't add it on because if I take the side of the case off, my warranty is voided. I never heard of that, but that's all right.
Anyway. That's normal.
That's fairly common, yeah.
Yeah, it's very common because the minute you go in there and start hooking stuff up, if you don't hook it up correctly and you don't ground yourself, you could possibly short out the motherboard and everything else.
Yeah, any damage you cause by fooling around inside wouldn't be covered under the warranty.
Yeah, that part I know. But I just want to take, like if I want to add in some more memory, I have to take it back to him and pay him the retail price for the memory, and I can't even buy it on sale. But anyway, that's beside the point.
Well, you should be able to buy the stuff elsewhere.
And then pay them an installation fee to install it.
Yeah, and just pay them an installation.
That might cost more than buying it from them.
Yeah, right.
We offer discounts on our RAM if we install it.
All right, well, my second question is, are there any DVD software that I can use on my CD burner it will allow me to burn a CD, burn a DVD.
Well, the Nero.
No. No, listen to what he said.
Yeah,
DVDs and CDs are physically different. They have different lasers in them. There is no software that will let you make a DVD on a CD burner.
No, right. But,
you can make a video CD.
But the Nero software will detect that he's got a CD, even though it's the DVD software.
Right.
The Nero software will allow him to burn CDs to the CD burner.
No, right. He's asking and the other way around.
Yeah, I know. Right. But no,
there is another format called video CD or VCD. That allows you to put video on a CD, much like you get video on a DVD. That's right. Not very common. You may not find DVD players or CD players that can play that back.
Yeah. And the quality is not as good as a DVD.
But in general, your answer is no. You have to buy a DVD burner. Now, the other thing is you can get an external DVD burner run through your USB port or FireWire port.
Oh, okay.
And then if you've got a 2.0, if you've got
USB 2.0. 2 or better.
I got the 2.0.
Yeah.
Yeah, okay. So you should be all right with that.
Okay. And oftentimes the cost of that is about the same. The internal drives are cheaper, but once you pay for installation, it's about the same as an external drive.
Back to the top again.
Yeah.
There you go.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Sure. Our pleasure.
Just to go back on what he was talking about there just for a minute, I think Steve and I are both in the same plane there. That, you know, yeah, that's why we do too, is put the stickers on the back, because the minute folks go in there and start playing around, I've seen folks, the old story that I told a long, long time ago, a person was having video issues. So while the computer was on, they quick lifted the video card up and then pressed it back in. Well, it blew the motherboard.
Yeah, if you're lucky, it just blows the video card.
Yeah, right.
But, you know, I mean, it's when folks get in there and they don't know what they're doing.
Yeah, people with the best intentions, you know, poke around inside and can accidentally do something wrong. Or just a static short. If you don't ground yourself properly,
right now, we've buttoned up the houses and the heat's coming on.
Those grounding straps are important.
Yeah.
Yeah, the grounding straps protect the computer, not you.
Right. Yeah. Compute naked or get rid of your rug. Those are the two choices you actually have.
Well, now, see, that wouldn't help with you because you'd look like a rug when you're naked.
Yeah, that's... Thank you.
Oh!
Thank you very much.
It's burned in my eyes now. Oh, now I'm going to have nightmares.
I once did a show. We did a Christmas carol, and I was, of course, Christmas present, and I had this... coat that kind of came down in a slight V. I mean, it wasn't like decolletage. It was just a slight V. This woman came up to me after the show and looked at me and went, "Oh my God, I thought that was a sweater at your chest hair." And I thought, all right, thanks, man. Thanks a lot. I'm very excited here. We've got people in the forum who are new to me. That's kind of nice to see. All right, our next caller we've got time is Bill from Rochester, New York. Welcome, Bill. What's your question?
Hi, Nick. AQ Dittos.
Thank you.
Nick Nude? Oh.
Nick, I've got Windows XP, and I was told that I could use my laptop as a recording device, like a tape recorder. If I went to accessories and used the under tools, they've got a recording option there, and just hook up a mic. And I did. I looked at it, and there's a preset limitation of 60 seconds.
Yes.
Is there a way to expand that?
Not with that product, but instead you should go, and instead of using that, you want to use...
Total Recorder?
Well, you could use Total Recorder, or Audacity is the one I was thinking of.
Well, Audacity has an editor, too, The Windows Sound Recorder is mostly intended for just making chirp sounds or alert sounds, so that's why there's a 30-second limit.
So where do I go to get Audacity?
You can find it on the web. Hold on 1 second. I'll get to it in a moment.
Audacity.sourceforge.com.
Oh, you're right. And Audacity.sourceforge.com. We've already got that in our list. Right.
And Total Recorder is already in the link list, too.
Total Recorder is like $11 or $15 or whatever the number is. And it does that and much more. Audacity, I use it every week. I have meetings that I go to, and I just start Audacity, and it records the entire meeting.
Okay, now, do you need a directional mic or a condenser mic? What is better for quality?
How many people will you be
I'm interviewing one person, and it's a two-way conversation. It's a war veteran, World War II. It's for posterity. We're doing this. We want a decent quality.
Depending upon your interviewing style, one thing you might consider is taking a single cardioid microphone and... Much as you see the people on the newscast do, they talk into the microphone and then they point the microphone at the other individual. If that's what you want to do, that would be a cardioid unidirectional microphone. If you're going to be sitting on a table, you could do a round table type of thing with an omnidirectional microphone. They're a little bit harder to find a good one. And you want to do, oh, you're right, the blue snowball would be a good one. But you want to be in a room with a lot of soft surfaces when you do that. You pick up a lot of room reverb. So
okay. Yeah, the easiest way is the cardioid. We got to take a break. Be back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, Chris Wright, Jessica Sawyer, me, Nick Francesco, and you. It's 20 minutes after the hour at Soundbites on 1180 WHAM.
As the writer's strike continue and most shows in rerun, please knows that we will still do what we do's. You're still to get newest news and talking about stuff. We're thanked to you for can understanding. This is Radio News Wham.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
I'm Steve Ray.
I'm Chris Reich.
And I'm Jessica Sawyer.
And at 24 minutes after the hour, you're listening to Sound Bites. Before we get back to the phones, you should know that the Microsoft will strip the click-to-activate warning from Internet Explorer 7 starting next month, according to a company product manager. This is a side benefit, they're calling it, of the settlement that Microsoft struck with Aeolus Technologies last August. Next month, Microsoft will preview the modified Internet Explorer that eliminates the warning that's been popping up on screens when users select multimedia content, such as clicking on a link to a Flash file or a PDF document. That notice first appeared in IE in April 2006, when Microsoft began requiring users to approve ActiveX controls the first time they were run from the browser. What's happening now is that a settlement with Aeolus and a patent infringement suit paved the way for Microsoft to turn off that click to activate thing. It's called the Internet Explorer Automatic Component Activation Preview. It will appear in the download center next month. The tweaked IE will be rolled out in the next betas of Windows Vista Service Pack 1 and Windows XP Service Pack 3, and the changes will be pushed to all IE 7 users in April 2008. It's important to note this change doesn't require any modifications to existing web pages or any of that nonsense. What it means is if you click on an ActiveX component, it will no longer prevent you from running it without your explicit saying yes. So the problem is that makes it a lot easier to watch your YouTubes and all that other nonsense. But what it means is it will also once again allow the bad guys to sneak ActiveX controls into your machine through the web browser. I think this is a step backwards, and I am very, very unimpressed. All right, our next caller is Jeff from Rochester, New York. Welcome, Jeff. What's your question?
I just bought a compact computer, and I've had it for a couple months. I actually started with the Microsoft Home and Student Trial Edition, and then I actually bought the Microsoft Office Pro. Ever since I started doing that, I tried to install a program, and now I have Windows Installer coming up all the time. And I try and click off of it. It keeps on replicating itself. And
what's it trying to install?
Yeah.
It was trying to install the Windows Professional, the Microsoft Office Pro, the Office Pro Professional version. I initially started with the trial version. And right now, one time it went there and it keeps on like stalling.
Well, you gotta, Jeff, the best thing to do, you got to go in and uninstall that particular version.
Yeah, that's what I tried to do.
And it's not letting you?
No, it's not letting me at all because it keeps on coming up and saying it doesn't understand the language. And one of the things that it said it was missing a config, I think it was an execute, config.xml, and it can't understand the language. I don't know what happened.
Well, the Windows installer takes over very easily so that whenever you install anything, the Windows installer tries to run instead of using the program's own installer. But it almost sounds like you have a partial uninstall of Office and it's trying to reinstall Office.
When you installed Office Professional, did you first uninstall Office Home and Student Trial?
No.
There's your problem.
That's the issue.
You need to go into the Add Remove Programs and uninstall both. Office Pro and Office Home and Student Trial.
And you may have to do them in the right order, but there's no way to know what the right order is.
The right order would be to the last one installed. So if you got the paid version, you want to install that first, reboot, and then go back.
Uninstall, you mean.
Or uninstall. Reboot, and then uninstall
the home and trial version.
The home and trial version.
Then you should be able to install the Office Pro without a problem.
Okay, yes. Because it's really confusing because, you know, I...
One other thing you could do, Jeff. Now, how long ago did you do this?
About a week ago, and it's been doing it all the time.
All right, what you can do, which might help if that doesn't work, you can always go back to a restore point before you change the registry and install that.
Right.
So if you pick a restore point, say 2 weeks ago, go back to that, and then from there, uninstall the trial version if this doesn't work, and then try reinstalling the other.
When I go back, if I went back, how do I actually, I mean, I'm pretty much a novice on this, unfortunately.
What you would do is if you go to the start button, go into programs, under accessories is system tools, and one of it is system restore. You would pick a restore point back before, if you know the specific date, a day or two before that, that will allow you to grab a point in time there.
Okay, well, thank you. I'm definitely going to. A
couple different things that you can try, but first try uninstalling from the point that you're at right now.
Something similar happens on Mac, since Apple and apparently Microsoft are bundling a demo of Microsoft Office on all new Macs. Mm-hmm. If you then install the real Microsoft Office, it can sometimes still think it's the demo. You have to remember to uninstall the demo first, and it's in the instructions that no one ever reads.
Right.
Right. I was just, you know, I like the little. You just throw in a disk, go to the install, and I thought I'd take care of everything, and it seems like it messed up everything on me right now.
Right.
Okay, well, thank you for your time. I really appreciate it.
You're right. It's our pleasure. Thank you.
That's
what we're here for.
Our next caller is Patty from Penfield. Welcome, Patty. What's your question?
Hi. I don't know if you remember. I called in last week. I'm just calling to give you an update for what it's worth.
Excellent.
I was able to use my scroll wheel in Microsoft Word 2007. Well, I can in the ribbon, but not in the document, and I can use it everywhere else. And you guys suggested to try to touch my mouse. And I did that. I tried three different mice, PS2 and USB.
Mm-hmm.
It didn't help. And I tried those same three mice on other computers, and they worked fine.
Okay.
I guess, would my next guess be that it has something to do with my installation of Word?
All right, here's one other thing that you might want to try. Now, I assume that you're running Windows XP?
Yes.
All right, if you do a search through your directories for normal.dot. And if you find the normal.dot file, delete it.
Oh.
What it does is it has all your settings for Word and everything else. But the cool thing is once you delete it and you start up Word again, it's going to recreate a generic file again. So if there's a setting that accidentally got changed in there or something else about using and scrolling with the mouse that was stopped, it, you know, by starting Word up again, it would create the new file, and your scroll might work.
Okay, I'll give it a shot.
Give it a shot, and again, let us know.
All right, if that doesn't work, would you suppose I could uninstall and reinstall?
Yeah, you might want to do it there, but I think it might be with just the normal.dot file.
That, I hope so.
Because, you know, you said Word is the only one that you're having issues with, and Excel and all the rest of them are working fine.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, give that a shot.
Okay, guys.
All righty.
It may also be a setting in the mouse driver. Sometimes you can configure buttons for specific programs.
But that again would be in the Word program. It's specific to Word because you said Excel.
Right. But in the mouse driver, you can say, you know, in Excel, this button does this. In Word, this button does something else. So maybe the scroll button has been accidentally redefined to do something else. So there's something to check, too.
But again, this wouldn't those settings all be in the normal.dot?
No, that would be in the mouse driver preferences in
but
your
then
mouse
that
control
mouse,
panel.
No, it wouldn't be. It's usually specific to each program.
Right. If it's a mouse setting, then it would be in the mouse preferences. If it's a Word setting, it would be in the
mouse,
Word settings.
Mouse preferences outside of Windows, when you set it, that's for any program that you do it in.
But like, some mouse preferences, you can configure applications separately.
Yeah, if the problem only happens in Word, then it's a Word setting somewhere.
Yeah.
That's just the way that has to be. All right. Our next caller is Mickey from Henrietta. Welcome, Mickey. What's your question?
Hi. I bought my husband a laptop 2 weeks ago.
Oh, he's a very lucky man.
Well, mostly. this is the fourth computer of the house, and unfortunately, I could not find one that was not in the wonderful new version of Vista.
Oh, yeah.
And he's having problems with it, and because he's away, and I played with it, but not enough to know what I'm doing to tell him how to get out of trouble. Would I be crazy to just put in XP?
You'd have to buy a version.
Well,
I mean,
yeah,
to be, we're going to tell you that because that's legal. All right.
Yeah.
You'd have to buy a version. I personally would not find that crazy at all.
No, I've done it for a number of folks.
Okay. Well, I didn't think it was crazy, but
no,
before
I've...
you
should have come to one of us guys first, because I'm still ordering machines. It's about the only thing I'm ordering right now is still machines with XP on them.
Yep. I went to a local place I've dealt with a lot, and they have been ordering and ordering things left with XP, and they said they couldn't get any more.
That's bull.
It was the end.
They might not be able to get any more through their vendors. Somebody else that uses different vendors might.
Yeah, but you pick
a
different vendor if you want to keep the customer happy. That's what we're all
at
about.
At any rate, yes, Mickey, you can, in fact, go buy a copy of XP and just wipe out the machine and start it off.
You can still get it, can't you, Steve?
We still can get the XP home. I haven't looked lately to order a computer with it on it.
If your customer really wants it, you...
Yep.
That's what I mean. That's what I'm trying to say is... You or I mean, that's what the customer wants. That's what you want to do.
All right, we got to take a break.
Okay. Thanks.
Thank you so much, Mickey. Going to take a break. Back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, Chris Reich, Jessica Sawyer, me, Nick Francesco, and you. It's 35 minutes after the hour at Soundbites on 1180 WHAM. Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
I'm Steve Ray.
I'm Chris Reich.
And I'm Jessica Sawyer.
And at 38 minutes after the hour, you're listening to Soundbites. Microsoft, this coming Tuesday, Microsoft's monthly visitor will bring two security bulletins for Microsoft, one of which is critical and involves a remotely exploitable hole on Windows systems, the other of which is rated important and also affects Windows. EI Zero Day Tracker, as of November 9th, is listing three active zero-day Windows and Internet Explorer vulnerabilities, all of which have been publicly disclosed and or used in attacks, and none of which are patched. The critical patch promised for the November 13th patch Tuesday could well be a flaw in a macro vision driver on Windows XP and Windows 2003. That vulnerability was actively being exploited in the wild as of November 5th, when Microsoft sent a special security advisory to warn customers of the danger of a complete system takeover. Microsoft said at the time that Vista is immune to the vulnerability, which is a memory corruption error in the macro vision security driver. When processing user-supplied data, the vulnerability can be used by local attackers to gain so-called Ring Zero privileges, a hierarchical level with the most privileges and which interacts most directly with physical hardware, including CPU and memory. So for those of you who are actually using Windows should be, and that should be most of you, should be looking forward to the Patch Tuesday updates to save your system from being taken over completely by someone else. Lovely. Isn't that lovely?
Interesting.
It is interesting. Oh, before we go on, I just want to talk for a minute about this. I just got to talk about this because this is so cool. There is a thing called Pandora at pandora.com, P-A-N-D-O-R-A. It's part of the Music Genome Project. And what it does is you go there and you put in an artist's name or a genre of music or whatever, and it creates what they call a radio station with that sort of music from that artist and others like that artist. So, for example, if you go there and put in hip-hop, you'll get all hip-hop music. You go there and put Diana Krall, you'll get all, romantic or ballady kind of stuff. You go there, put Elvis, you get all, 50s kind of Elvis music. And it's called Pandora. Well, now Sprint actually has Pandora on your phone. It's called Pandora to Go. And I was playing with it the other day, and I was actually impressed. The quality of sound is good, and you create your stations either on there or on Pandora, because you log in, and that means anything I created at home shows up on the phone and vice versa. I listened to it all the way to work the other day, and it never skipped. And I went through at least three cell towers. It never skipped. It never stuttered. It never had a problem at all. I was really impressed. Unfortunately, so far it's only available on Sprint, but it's a very cool thing. If you're a Sprint customer, talk to them about Pandora to Go, because I got to be honest with you, I'm actually impressed. When I'm wandering around campus or I'm going from one place to another, it's nice to be able to listen to what I want to listen to. Obviously, they're doing this so that, let's say, you're a big fan of Elvis, but you've never heard of some of the other people who play that type of music, or let's say Diana Krall, because she's more contemporary. And so you hear that other stuff and you think, oh, that's interesting. I'll check out their albums as well. That's the whole idea behind it. But it's really very cool to be able to just carry all your music on the phone. And I was actually impressed by the quality of sound that came out of this little Moto Razr that I've got. And that's it's just a neat, cool thing. So if you get a chance and you're a Sprint customer, check out Pandora and then think about having Pandora to go, because it's just cool. I was very impressed.
So are those songs downloaded, Nick?
No, they're streamed. It's a regular stream like any... You know, you don't get control. You don't get to go back. You know, you do get to vote up or down on your favorite songs, both on the phone and normally. So, you know, I don't like that one. I don't like that one. And you get fewer of those, or I really like this one. You get more of that type.
So nothing's being captured. You're just listening to it as if it were a normal broadcast station.
Right. And that's how they get, you know, that's how they got all these people to join in. You can't capture the music. You can't steal the music, because we know we're all thieves.
Right.
But you do get to listen to the music. You get to listen to it all day for free. And that's hard to beat. So... if you're interested in that sort of thing, it's called Pandora to Go. Well, Pandora.com on your computer and Pandora to Go on your cell phone. Pretty neat toy. All right, our next caller is Andrew from Henrietta, New York. Welcome, Andrew. What's your question?
How you doing?
Good. How are you?
I have a reasonably technical question for you guys.
Well, we'll do our best.
Okay. I have been having trouble with my computer spontaneously rebooting itself for the past several months.
My golly, you're very laid back about that.
Yeah.
Very patient. Yeah, it's been doing it for months.
I've had data loss and, you know, the whole nine yards. It's been quite disturbing. But
right.
I swapped out the power supply, and I have recently changed the memory modules, and it's still happening. And, in fact, since I changed the memory module, it seemed to have improved, but the last couple of weeks it's gotten worse.
So I take it the inside of the machine is pretty well cleaned out also?
As far as, like, dust-free?
Yeah. Especially around the CPU fan.
I haven't checked that. But,
well, see, I've had two systems in this week.
You probably would have noticed when you opened the computer.
Yeah, you would have.
No, not necessarily. I mean, around the fins underneath some of these fans get so clogged that they cause overheating. And on two different machines, I literally took them outside, blew them out, and they started working okay. Because the fins are so jammed with dust and dirt. The fans are spinning, but, you know, they're blowing on top of all this dust and dirt that really isn't cooling the fans or the heat sinks, and the heat sinks are getting overheated, and then thus causing it to reboot. If it cools down for a little bit, then you bring it back up. So that's why, I mean, you might want to take a good look at that, but if those are clear, then you're definitely looking at some type of other hardware issue.
Well, it could also be static electricity.
Could be.
We are at that point of the year. We actually talked a little bit about this before. Where you can zap your computer, let's say you shuffle your feet or you have a rug and you wear socks while you're computing and you swing your feet or something, you can build up a static charge that if you touch the machine, or sometimes it even happens to the keyboard, if you're lucky, it just reboots the machine. But you're putting, you know, hundreds of thousands of volts or whatever through that machine, low amps, but lots of volts, or maybe it's the other way around.
Probably not it, because sometimes it just reboots on its own, like when I'm not touching it.
Mm-hmm. I would definitely check the fins.
Is it actually rebooting, or is it shutting off and staying off?
Well, I have it set. Windows is crashing. It's the blue screen of death, and it's set to reset itself.
That's probably not thermal, then, because a thermal issue would just shut down, and it wouldn't turn back on until it cooled off enough.
If what you're actually getting is a blue screen of death...
Turn off the auto restart and try to read that message and see if it helps any.
That's what I did a while ago, and that's what led me to swap out the memory module, because error codes were generic memory issues. I even ran the Memtest 86 freeware program.
Have you tested the hard drive?
What's that?
Have you tested the hard drive?
Have I tested the hard drive?
Yes.
No.
Could be a bad section in the master boot record.
Interesting. Okay.
Well, but ran Memtest, and what came up?
Well, it reset the machine.
Well, that you know what?
Yeah, that's...
that tells me you could have a definite memory problem. Now, it may not be the memory. It may well be the memory slots on the motherboard.
Or, no, he could have what they call a DMA. And that's the memory. Right. The built-on DMA, DMA sure. is the memory right built onto the motherboard, which is usually the 64K cache. And if the DMA is bad on the motherboard, normally you get beeps. But if this is rebooting, it could be getting ready to go and causing issues there. But that's why you need to do a diagnostic and run it on all of the hardware the motherboard, the memory, and the hard drive.
Okay, so how can I do a diagnostic on the hard drive and the motherboard?
Well, generally, that actually requires specialized software from the vendor, unfortunately.
Okay.
How old is this machine?
I think I got it like 2 years ago. It's kind of a custom-built thing.
That's what I was just going to ask. Yeah, if it was a name-brand machine, they often come with diagnostics built in, or you can go to that website and download the diagnostics.
You can try SpinRite for the hard drive.
Okay.
You got the MEM test. And then try going to PCWorld.com, and they have quite a few diagnostic tools that you can download and try there.
Okay.
All right?
Thank you. That's giving me ideas, which I was...
Well, unfortunately, that's how troubleshooting works. You replace one thing, see what happens. Replace the next thing, see what happens.
That's the name of the game.
All right, we got to take a break. Back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, Chris Wright, Jessica Sawyer, me, Nick Francesco, and you. 48 minutes after the hour, Soundbites, 1180 WHAM. Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
I'm Steve Ray.
I'm Chris Wright.
And I'm Jessica Sawyer.
And at 52 minutes after the hour, you're listening to Soundbites. Before we go on to our next segment... Eagle Wolf was talking about the possibility that our last caller has to reseat some cards, that it could be a high-end graphics card going bad from overheating, which can also cause the blue screen of death.
Yeah,
Eagle Wolf, right, almost as often as Dolores, almost. All right, kiddies, sit back, go get your footy jammies on, grab your mug of hot cocoa, sit in Indian style in a semicircle on the floor around the rocking chair. If we can slap them awake, it's time for Story Hour with Uncle Dave. Uncle Dave? Uncle Dave!
You ready for me this week?
I don't know. From what you were talking about back in the break room before the show, I don't know if we want to hear from you this week. Strap yourselves
in,
kids.
You shouldn't have woken me up.
Fasten your
seatbelt. You should have left in, sleeping dog's
lap. We're in for a bumpy ride.
All right, first of all, good news. Well, a lot of you folks have been asking for it, and I can't take for the credit for this, but my partner Dan Deary has put together for the Soundbite CD, so that, folks, when you put the CD in, it will now automatically boot up to a menu that you can sit there and browse the CD. You can check out our website. You can exit out. And then he's got all the various tools that we ask you to install, buttons that you just click, and it will install them. Now, I do caution you.
This is for the Security Tango.
This is for the Security Tango CD. That there are other goodies that if you go exploring, I've put other programs and tools that I've found very useful on the CD, and they're in there. They just don't have the menu items to install them, like OpenOffice and a few of the others.
Right.
Just because there'd be too many. I keep looking for great stuff to recommend for folks to try out and use, and I just can't put them all there. But the main ones are there on the menu, and like I said, you can explore. It even has he created a PDF. You can pull up and look and browse our list that we normally tell you to print off of everything that is on the CD. All right, now going on to my next item. Like I said, I am loaded for bear.
Here we go.
Okay, folks, we've debated this for years. It's been on the radio, the TV, and everything else. When you have a computer at work, guess what? It's not yours! It belongs to work! So when a company turns around and asks me to come in and set up security, don't get your underwear in a wedgie trying to tell me that it's inconvenient for you. I don't care, because my main purpose is to come in, put security in place, and have it secure for the company. I don't care about you, and I'll be very blunt about it, and I'll tell it to your face.
The problem is we call them personal computers. And possibly in your home.
They're taking it too personal.
In your home, of course, Microsoft owns it.
Yeah.
At work, Microsoft owns it, but behind them is the company that paid for it.
Exactly. And until you show me a slip that you paid for it, they don't get to say what goes on it and what doesn't. If I got to put security on it to keep the network safe, then that's the way it is. You don't like it, then go do whatever you want on your own home computer. But when it's a business computer, that's it. A business computer. You don't own it. Yes, it's on your desk, but when you leave or retire or whatever, you don't take that with you. It still stays there. So it's not yours. It's the business.
I have the toughest time constantly reminding all my faculty members that they do not own those computers. I do.
Oh, yeah.
Well, of course, actually, the Saunders College of Business owns them, but I have a tough time reminding them of that sometimes.
I had a client, but it's my computer. I said, fine, show me the receipt. Couldn't do it.
All right, Uncle Dave's...
Well, see, and that goes back to the other part about people feel the company's spying on them. Well, you don't make personal calls. You don't make email. I've gone into big companies, and it gets annoying for me because I need to check my webmail from my service, servicing their computer, and webmail has been shut off through their proxy server.
Right.
So many people are checking their home email. You don't need to check your home email at work. You're at work.
Yes.
Right.
Yeah.
I
so far, they haven't blocked my personal webmail server.
Yeah. But yeah, I completely agree. If, you know, you're limited as to the number of calls, depending on the company. You make no calls.
Right. A lot of companies.
Limited calls on the phone.
A lot of companies know you occasionally may have to make a personal phone call.
And certainly if there's an emergency, nobody would
say. Yeah, but spending hours on the phone, you know, chatting with your uncle.
Or spending hours on the phone answering your private email.
But a lot of folks don't realize every time you pick up that phone, if it's a business line, your boss is being charged.
Right.
For every call that you make out.
You can make free phone calls at home on your landline because businesses are paying up the wazoo for, for business metered rates.
So again,
it's 8.3 cents a minute no matter incoming or outgoing.
Again, it's your phone, but calling everybody to check to see if they're coming for the Christmas party or whatever. You know, again, you're abusing and abusing. It's not yours. So don't get upset, folks, when we sit there and ask you to put extra security on there because we're there to protect the business. And I've run into this a couple times. Folks get very defensive, like you said, Nick, that, you know, they think it's, theirs.
All right.
No.
Steve, hold him down. I've got the tranquilizer.
I'm right there with him, so we got to hold us both down.
It's going to be a two against one.
Standing in the background laughing his head off. He's not helping
me
at all.
And that's always the annoyance, that security is inconvenient. Yes.
Yes, it is.
Yeah. I put a lock on my door so other people can't break in. That makes it harder for me to get in the house.
Right. When I go to my car in the parking lot, I have to unlock it.
Yep.
That's inconvenient. I got over it a long time ago.
Well, now they've got new dongles for your keychain.
Thank you for muddying the waters.
When you walk
point.
Near the car,
yes,
it unlocks itself.
Thank you. All right, now I'm going to tranquilize both of them.
But he goes nude.
We're going to take a break. We'll be back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Steve Wright, Chris Wright, Jessica Sawyer, me, Nick Francesco, and you. It is 59 minutes after the hour. Somebody out there help me. You're listening to Soundbites on 1180 WHAM. Get me out of here. Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
I'm Steve Ray.
I'm Chris Wright.
And I'm Jessica Sawyer.
And it's 7 minutes after the hour. You're listening to Soundbites. And I would like Eagle Wolf to know that if I get magically transported to another planet, I have camouflage. That's what the shoe was razzing me about, my shirt, which you can see on the Soundbites thing. I don't even remember where this came from. I think it was a second remainder thing, so I don't remember.
If you ever go into a blue forest, though.
That's what I'm saying. If I go into a blue forest, I'm in camouflage. You find those on some other planet, and I'm, get magically transported to Venus. Well, Venus where humans could actually live. And there you are. I'm ready to go. Listen, every week we do a poll on our website, soundbites.org. That's bites with a Y. Francis would like us to remind you. Last week it was about social networking sites and how they're selling your information. 250 of you voted, tying for number 263 on the all-time hit list. Thanks to each and every one of you.
And some big disturbing news on that same front. Microsoft bought a huge stake in Facebook.
Yeah.
So now if you're a Facebook member, Microsoft has all your information.
Right, right. And I've got a news article on that I'll actually do in a little while about ads appearing on that. But right now we're going to talk about this week's poll. There was an article in the news this week that under a new program announced Friday, large companies that sell refurbished PCs can get a brand spanking new copy of Windows to put on the machine, provided they pay Microsoft for the privilege. The initiative, which provides refurbishers with a special version of Windows XP, could help save more machines from heading to the landfill. In many cases, though, it means Microsoft will be getting paid twice for putting Windows on the same PC. That's because to properly resell a refurbished PC using its original copy of Windows, Microsoft requires that resellers have either the certificate of authenticity that came with the PC or its restore disks, things which can often get lost along the way. Businesses can also try to get a duplicate copy from the manufacturer, but that's difficult and time-consuming
And expensive.
And expensive. So Microsoft won't say how much it's charging for the special version of an XP, and I don't know what it means by special version, other than to say that it's somewhat less than the computer maker would pay to put Windows on a new machine. So this week's poll question is, would you pay to put Windows on an old computer? The choices, of course, are, oh, heck yeah, not on your Tintype. What? You have to listen to that in a Keanu Reeves voice. What? One word, Linux, and Macs don't get old, kinda. So far, we've had 90 people voting, and Linux is actually the number one choice, followed closely by not on your Tintype. 11 of you think, oh, heck yeah, and 11 of you said, what, and 6 people don't think Macs actually get old. Now, once you have voted in the poll, click, look at the little yellow box underneath it, click on Give Us Your Opinion. It takes you to my website, AskNick.com. That's AskNick.com, where you can actually leave an opinion on this thing, because I know that just one or two, you know, one little mouse click just isn't enough for you. You people need to be able to actually put in some information. Several of you are mentioning that they would never pay for a second copy of Windows. Of course, not paying for that second copy is, in fact, naturally illegal. But that's your choice as an adult human being. You have to do what you want with that.
We run into this all the time with people, mostly our customers who buy a new computer. They want us to sell their old one, or they want to sell their old one. And, you know, it's, well, we need your disks. We have to, well, one, you want to erase your stuff, but then we need to put the system back onto it, and we need your disks. I don't have them. Well, then we can't sell it.
Right.
Basically, because someone's not going to buy a computer, or now you have to add the $130 cost of buying a new version of the operating system.
Right.
And if it's an old computer, it may not run the new version of the operating system.
That's
so
right.
You have to find your disks, or we can't sell it.
Right, but now you'll be able to buy another copy of XP. I don't think it's going to be a lot cheaper.
I'm digging through the requirements. Here we go. Eligibility requirement. You have to have a track record of supplying an average of 5,000 refurbished PCs over the last 12 months in order to join the Microsoft refurbishment program.
Right.
So you have to sell 5,000 refurbished computers a year.
And so that means you've been buying 5,000 copies of Windows from them, and now they're going to give you the opportunity to do it cheaper. I'm a little confused by that. I'm just a little confused by that. But I guess that's okay. That's the way I am. So anyway, that's the thing. And I just say throw Ubuntu on it. Move on. You know, why not? All right. Our next caller is David from Henrietta, New York. Welcome, David. What's your question?
Good morning. Yeah, I've got a Mac question about Adobe Acrobat. Sure. I've got version 6 of Acrobat installed, and I did there was an update, 6.0.1. It's giving me installed that yesterday, it's giving me this screen that says the currently selected language resources are not supported by the current version of Adobe Acrobat. Please select the language in the International System Preference panel. Do you know if I should continue to do the other updates like 6.02, 03A?
Yeah, that's what I was just checking, because I know there was a lot more updates to 6 than that, and the current version is 8, so that's right. Another issue.
Yep.
Now, what operating system are you running on as well?
It's a 10 point...
Have you gone to 10.5 yet?
No, 10.4.10.
Okay, I'm not sure the compatibility of Acrobat in 10.5. So, there's a couple of issues. You probably want to go back and finish installing the rest of the Acrobat 6 updates.
Okay.
And you have to install them in order, which is annoying. The auto updater will find the 601, 602, and 603, I think 604. I might have gone to 609, I'm trying to remember, on Acrobat 6. It'll find them all, but then it will list them alphabetically instead of chronologically, and then won't install them right.
Yeah.
So, yeah, you have to install them in order by the version number.
Okay. You think that'll do it? Cause
it should. Crashed. Well, have you tried going to the International System Preference and setting your language?
Yeah, I mean, what I'm saying there is just the regular, English. Order of, you know, it gives you the languages available, and English is right at the top, and order for sorted list, English is the first one. Would that be in the input menu, too? I mean, does that make any difference?
Yeah, the input menu just lets you pick what language you're typing in, so that shouldn't matter. But the language list and the format list should be set to English. So it may be that was one of the bugs in 601 that 602 fixed.
Yeah, under region, just as the United States, under formats, and that's about it. English isn't even mentioned on that page. The only place English is mentioned is on the language page.
Right, yeah. Yeah, for the under formats, it's the date formatting, time formatting.
Right.
If you change to a European date format, so it's like 11 November. Right. Although today's 11-11, so it doesn't matter.
Right.
In Europe or America.
Right.
Yeah, some programs can get confused by the different language resources. So it may be that that was just a bug that they fixed in the newer version.
Gotcha. Yeah, I'm on the Adobe page here, and I can see it goes right up to 605.
Mm-hmm.
So that'll probably do it, anything in order, though.
Right.
Yeah. Okay. Thank you, Steve, very much.
Bye-bye. All right. Thank you very much. Speaking of this being 11-11, I would like to, on the behalf of the entire Soundbites family, I would like to offer our heartfelt thanks to all the people who have served their country so ably over the years. It is Veterans Day. God bless each and every one of you. Thank you, Dave, specifically. He's our token veteran here on the...
But I got to say...
I don't know that. Were you... are you a veteran? No. All right.
But I got a nephew right now that, you know, my thoughts go out to him. That's over in Iraq right now. And, you know, Godspeed, and hope he comes home soon.
And my wife is a veteran in our family, so thank you, Shirley.
Yep.
She was deployed overseas, never made it as far as Vietnam, but... She made it to England. That's being deployed overseas.
Yep. Yes, it is. Yes, it is. All right. Our next caller is Sean from Canandaigua, New York. Welcome, Sean. What's your question?
Okay, so I took your guys' advices and got rid of my Windows ME machine.
Oh, yes, yes. Good for you. Let's hear it for Sean, everybody.
Hey.
Thank you. So I get to the point now where I am running Totem as my movie player.
Yeah, oh, you're under Linux.
Yeah. And I cannot do anything with Totem. I've been tried installing a new version of it.
Well, Define can't do anything. What?
Okay, so if you put a CD into the drive,
yeah,
it will pick it up and play the CD.
Yep.
If you close it and you open Totem again, it will not play it. I can't play any MP3 files. I can't play WMV files. Like, any video that comes from online, I cannot play. I don't know.
All right, some of that stuff doesn't play through Totem to begin with. Here's the problem with Linux. Most of the codecs, the algorithms that actually decode all of those file types so that you can view them,
right,
many of them are proprietary. MP3 is proprietary. Flash, for example, is proprietary. So... right, AAC is proprietary. So if you want to use those, they cannot legally provide them as part of a Linux distribution.
For free, they'd have to charge you for it.
Right, for free, so because they would have to pay for it. However, they can make them available, and you can download them. It's an interesting dichotomy. They cannot give them to you for free. You can download them for free.
It's that redistribution license.
Right.
You have to pay to redistribute the software.
Right, but you as an owner, as an end user can download them. And you will find in what version of Linux are you running?
Oh, that's an excellent question.
Thank you.
Yeah, that's a good one.
Well, whichever version it is, you don't have to go look now, but whichever version it is, there's often a file on the hard drive where you can find at their website instructions on how to download Flash and how to download the MP3 codec. In fact, the entire Windows, there's a whole section called W32 codecs, which is all the Windows codecs to do all of their media types. So that's what you have. Oh, okay.
Or you could also install Wine and actually run a Windows program, but that's what you're trying to get away from.
Right, that's what you're trying to get away from. But definitely try that. Go to there and find out how to download MP3 player, how to download the MP3 codecs, how to download Flash and all the other Windows codecs.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. We got to take a break. Back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Steve Wright, Chris Wright, Jessica Sawyer, me, Nick Francesco, and you. It's 19 minutes after the hour, and you are listening to Soundbites on 1180 WHAM. Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
I'm Steve Wright.
I'm Chris Wright.
And I'm Jessica Sawyer.
And at 22 minutes after the hour, we are Soundbites. Yeah. Oh, here's the coolest thing. This is so cool. To celebrate the toys that were, we need to celebrate the toys that were inducted Thursday into the National Toy Hall of Fame right here in Rochester. So in order to celebrate that, hug a red-haired doll, grab a single-button joystick, or go fly a kite. Raggedy Andy, the Atari... We have video cameras. We have a video camera. Raggedy Andy, the Atari, I'd like to apologize for everybody who's been watching the video feed. Raggedy Andy, the Atari 2600 video game system, and the kite were chosen for entry into the Strong National Museum of Play's all-star lineup at the National Toy Hall of Fame right here in Rochester, New York. They joined the Bicycle, Lionel Model Trains, Mr. Potato Head, 33 other classic playthings. These are outstanding toys that have engaged multiple generations over time, inspiring them to create, learn, and discover, said the Rochester Museum's president, G. Rowley Adams. In 1977, Atari converted a television set, for good or bad, into a toy. While it wasn't the first home video game system, it popularized the fledgling electronic game genre with its bright colors, catchy music, and pop-in cartridge versions of arcade favorites such as Pac-Man, Frogger, and Space Invaders. It may look primitive compared to the advanced video game systems available today, but it helped make these possible, said the museum's curator, Patricia Hogan. The game system is the most recently invented member of the Hall of Fame. So if you get a chance, head on down to the Strong National Museum and pay your tributes to the Atari 2600 video game system on display there today. I think that's so cool. It's so cool for us to have the National Toy Hall of Fame here in Rochester, New York.
What was really neat is you can now buy an Atari 2600 looking joystick that has a couple of dozen 2600 games on it and a video out and the chips and the processors and the whole thing.
All built into the joystick.
Yeah. You plug the joystick into your TV and there's all the games.
Yeah, it used to be a console bigger than a laptop.
Yep.
And now the whole thing just fits right in the thing.
Although Atari did not make the first home video game system. That was the Magnavox Odyssey.
I had one of those.
I had one of those too, yeah.
And it played Pong as near as I can recall.
Well, it also had cartridges on it.
Yeah, it did.
Yep.
But you had to actually buy those separately. That was kind of a disappointment all the way around in our family. All right, our next caller is Alex from Irondequoit. Welcome, Alex. What's your question?
Hi, guys. I'm having some trouble with my dial-up connection. It's been a little buggy over the last couple of weeks. A couple things. One is when I'm using Netscape on a dial-up connection as our ISP. And when we go to launch it from the shortcut, instead of going directly to their little customized interface window to dial up, it's going into Windows version of the dial-up connection app list coming up. And then, and sometimes what happens is you just close that, and then the Netscape window comes up. And sometimes, even when after we get connected, you go to launch a browser window, and nothing comes up. So, for example, if you said, well, let's go to Google, it would say it would grind a little bit, you know, because I'm on dial-up, so it would grind a little bit, and it would say done, but there'd be a blank page. I can't get any websites to come up. And so I'm just struggling to get this thing fixed.
What version of Windows are you running?
I am running XP.
And what version of Netscape?
Well, I'm not using Netscape as the browser. I'm using it as the ISP. So I'm running Microsoft Explorer as the browser.
And I wonder if that's the problem.
Well,
it
worked for 2 or 3 years. I've been on this particular dial-up connection. So. Yeah, in the last couple of weeks, it's being real buggy on me.
See, I haven't used dial-up in so long. Where do you go? There's a place you can go to tell Windows, don't use my dial-up program.
Yeah, in the internet option? Yeah, if you go to...
Or is it in network connections on the dial-up networking connection?
No, if you go into control panel,
mm-hmm.
Let's see, under internet options, you go to connections, and under connections is where you can tell it, never dial or dial whenever or always dial a default connection.
But that's the Microsoft dialer.
That's what he's saying.
Netscape dialer?
If you make sure it says never dial a connection in there, then it won't try to dial and it'll let the Netscape dialer go through.
Okay. So maybe one of my kids did something.
or an update changed it.
Yeah, I was just saying, yeah. I did the Microsoft updates.
We talked about this earlier. Just because it's your computer doesn't mean Microsoft doesn't own it. So.
Oh, I know. And I heard you guys talking about that, too. And I think the other thing is Netscape may have tried to download a new version of their
there you go.
But Netscape's in this weird, precarious position that they're almost irrelevant these days.
Yeah.
Since they got bought by AOL, got bought by Time Warner. The Netscape search engine is very low on the lists now. The Netscape browser is very low on the lists.
Yeah.
But that can be a good thing, too, because the only people left using it don't have to compete for resources.
Right.
Yeah. And they got a nice little dial-up. It's relatively inexpensive. They got an accelerator that works pretty well. So.
Right.
Yeah. Is there any chance it's a virus that I'm not seeing with Norton?
It could be. That was one of the other things I was going to suggest is that some viruses try to dial out and they connect themselves to the Windows dialer.
And they want to connect to the internet so they can spread.
Right. So your next choice, I would suggest, your next thing would be to dance to Security Tango at securitytango.com. The problem with that is it wants you to download a bunch of software. So the thing you might want to do is call Dave's office at
442-4843.
And arrange to get the CD, which has all of that stuff on it.
All right. And it's securitytango.com?
You got it.
Yep. Now, is it Stinger? Is it the one you recommend?
One of them. There's a dozen of them. There's half a dozen things you need to run, and that, and those are all on the CD, and they're also all on the website.
Okay, so
click the Let's Dance button, and it'll take you right to that page.
All right. So the rhetorical question, are those virus seekers are better than most up-to-date viruses at Norton?
Well, as it says on the website, no one program does it all. Right. Norton will check for viruses, but it doesn't do a good job with spyware or any of the other types of things, keyloggers and stuff like that.
And the fact that Norton is such a well-known quantity, Norton and McAfee, is that the virus writers don't release a virus until it can get past Norton and McAfee.
Yep.
Okay, very good.
Okie doke.
Okay, thanks. Bye.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
All right, our next caller, Carl from Williamson. Welcome, Carl. What's your question?
A couple of weeks ago, Dave Enright was testing out a program called Super Anti-Spyware.
Mm-hmm.
I wondered if he had anything to report on that and how it worked and how it compares to Spybot and Adware.
I think it's another tool to use, and it catches quite a bit of stuff. Again, just like Nick was saying, no one particular program catches them all. So it's another tool that I've been trying out, and so far I've loved it.
There's been a lively discussion on it in the forums that some people
and on the chat
in the chat room that some people have had problems with it, and it turns out to be other spyware. I just don't like the name. Super Anti-Spyware Pro sounds like fake anti-spyware.
Yeah, it does.
But so far, no, I've found it to find a lot of stuff that Adware and Spybot didn't, to where I'm now running that program first, and then I add Adware and Spybot, and it reduces the amount of stuff Adware and Spybot find. But again, it's catching a lot of stuff. Because they're finding, you know, it's the old game of leapfrog. This is what it's all about, folks. The minute they put up one protection, the folks out there are finding other ways to get around that, so it's constantly leapfrogging. I'm not seeing as many viruses. What I'm seeing is a lot of Trojans and spyware, because the folks out there have finally learned, well, writing viruses, which I don't get paid anything for, versus stealing people's information, is more profitable. So that's why you're seeing the trend to go more towards spyware and Trojans than you hear us back a number of years ago. We'd always be saying, well, the virus for this week is, and we'd be telling you, update your antivirus program, update your antivirus program. You're not hearing that as much because the virus writers have slacked off on that and are going for the personal information. Because a lot of folks don't lock down their machines. They leave them wide open. Folks get in, or they will constantly answer or click on emails that say, I just had another one. This bank says, oh, you've got a $235 credit coming. Wait a minute. One problem. I don't bank with that bank. So, but it looked as official
as I got one of those. I got one of those today myself. And who sent me one for Roadrunner?
I did. I wanted to mention that. There is a really, really good, well-formatted Roadrunner scam running around. They're pulling the Roadrunner icons. They're pulling really good written text, although there's a couple of places where they go into GeekSpeak with the letter U instead of the word U.
Right.
The links all look good until you hover over them and find out the actual link. So it's a really, really good fake to steal your identity with there's a problem with your Roadrunner account type thing.
Well, that's, again, so, you know, as much as you can do.
I sent you a picture of it, so it wouldn't.
That's right. So a guy couldn't check the link and find out where it was coming from.
Yeah.
So, Carl, the answer to your question is, as much as you can do, yeah, try it out, see how you like it. Some folks are saying, yeah, they like it. Some are saying, eh, they're having issues. Again, whatever you can do to protect your machine, you want to do.
All right, we're going to take a break. Back in just a couple minutes, Dave Enright, Steve Ray, Chris Wright, Jessica Sawyer, me, Nick Francesco, and you. 32 minutes after the hour, Sound Bites on 1180 WHAM. Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
I'm Steve Ray.
I'm Chris Wright.
And I'm Jessica Sawyer.
And at 36 minutes after the hour, it's Sound Bites. All right. Oh, you're going to love this one. For those of you who are on Facebook, this was almost the poll this week. I thought that would be almost as good. Facebook has unveiled plans to target advertisements by injecting them into its members' conversations. Facebook is giving users some control over...
Conversations?
Yeah, you can have a conversation with somebody on Facebook.
Like an IM.
Right, and in the middle of it, Facebook will throw an ad that seems to come from you. That's the interesting part. Facebook is giving some users some control over whether to share information about their buying habits and other online activities with friends. For the program announced Tuesday to work, enough users must actually say yes to so advertisers can show users their pitches in the guise of friends' endorsements. David Heller, a senior analyst with the research group eMarketer, warned that users might not be as receptive to, you think, when they are communicating with friends on Facebook as they might when they are reading articles elsewhere in a more relaxed consuming state. Facebook is everyone's darling today. If there's a perceptual problem as a safe place for communications, then it will it be 2009's darling. Facebook's announcement follows by 2 weeks, Facebook Inc.'s deal to sell a 1.6% share to Microsoft and for $240 million, valuing Facebook at $15 billion.
And he laughed at Google's offer of $1 billion.
Yeah.
And just got himself valued at $15 billion. That's ridiculous.
Yeah, it really is. Facebook has begun transforming itself from an online hangout into an online business district. This is the end of Facebook. Companies can now create their own pages on Facebook for free and tailor their pitches to the activities of users' friends. For example, if a friend has booked a vacation on Travelocity, the online travel agency will be able to display the friend's photo as part of a social ad to entice the user to buy flights and hotel stays. So Chris and I are conversing on Facebook.
Right.
He booked a trip through Travelocity. I actually get an email that says from Chris, "Hey, I just booked on Travelocity. It was great. Are you planning a vacation? You ought to go."
Oh, I'm not liking that at all.
No. Advertisers can similarly have their pitches appear when friends review restaurants and buy books or DVDs. So I buy the DVD of, Spider-Man 3. And then you go look at a review of it and it'll pop up. "Hey, your friend Nick bought this and loves it. You ought to check it out."
Well, if it's done as a third party, this, say, "My friend Nick did this."
Right. That's different. That's different. Companies can even embed coding on Facebook called beacons that go to outside sites such as eBay or whatever, letting a Facebook user who lists an item for auction, for example, generate alert messages for Facebook friends who may then check out the item. "People influence people," says the Facebook chief executive. "Nothing influences a person more than a recommendation from a trusted friend."
So they're faking people.
People who fake people.
Technologically, this sounds pretty cool.
Technologically, I'm incredibly impressed.
Yeah.
This is a brilliant piece of coding. There's no question of that.
But, you know, from a social aspect and privacy
aspect, I'm
done.
I'm so not Facebook
terrible,
now.
Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely.
Well, and I'll let you there in a second. That's one of the big things I've been hearing all over the net about this Microsoft Facebook deal is that a lot of these social networking sites are so transitory that, you know, in a month when another one's better, everyone leaves.
Mm-hmm.
So this is a huge gamble for Microsoft.
It's only $1.5 billion. They don't care. That's pocket. That's not even pocket change. It's pocket lint.
$240 million. 1.5%.
Still.
Yeah. Still. Yeah. Pocket lint. Yeah. But it does signal an interesting trend in Microsoft moving away, possibly from a desktop operating system into an advertising driven.
Well, they're
looking
desperately
at Google
trying to
and
find
how much
the next
money,
thing.
Yeah. Look how much money Google is making selling advertising.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yep.
What's Google's business? Not search engines.
No, it isn't. It's
selling
advertising.
Yeah.
Right. Right. And Microsoft sees the handwriting on the wall. Take a look at the GOS. Take a look at the laptop. By the way, one laptop per child starting Monday for a week. If you buy two of them, you get one.
Buy two, get one.
Yeah. The other one goes to a needy child in a third world country. Completely perfect for me. I'll definitely do that.
Sure.
I'll definitely do that. That's at laptopgiving.org. So you definitely want to do that, but sorry, go ahead.
Well, this goes to a larger scale of what we were talking about before, that the company who bought the computer that's on your desk owns the computer.
Right.
You're using Facebook's server. Yeah, they paid and bought and maintained the server. They can do with it what they want.
Yep.
I'm just objecting to them using my name.
Well, that's the thing.
Impersonating
right.
me.
Even if they do it as a third party. "Hey, Nick really liked his Travelocity package. Why don't you go get one?" No, excuse me. If I want to recommend Travelocity, I will talk to people.
See, and that's just an extension of what a lot of the current shopping sites do. You know, people who bought this also bought this.
And that's
but
fine.
Not by name.
Right. And half the time it's bogus. You know that somebody who bought, you know, the latest nice, great story, you know, novel didn't also buy cookware. I mean, I don't think that's a major confluence there. I like this murder mystery, so I'm going to go out and buy pots and pans. I don't think.
Well,
it
maybe the
that
murder
way.
Mystery is about killing someone with pots and pans.
Well, maybe. So now they need new ones because they dented all the old ones. Yeah.
But I've never seen that. When I go buy music on Amazon, for example, I see other music coming up.
But some of that music is so out in left field, or some of those books are so out in left field compared to what genre I'm looking at.
Really, you find that to be the case?
Yeah.
I have.
Oh yeah, absolutely.
Okay.
Well, that partially, I think, reflects that my tastes are so eclectic. When I buy stuff, they can't categorize me.
And I also have eclectic tastes, and I'm seeing that whatever they show me, yeah, I could see
I got to say at least 20% of them are so insanely bogus. It's like somebody threw a pair of dice and just randomly picked something.
Interesting. I haven't found that.
Now, you can do, we're coming up to Christmas season. I might buy a book, a pot, you know, pot and pan, you know, a memory stick.
Right.
Completely unrelated devices.
Right, exactly.
So maybe somebody somewhere at one point maybe did buy.
Right. Speaking of which, we ought to take just a minute, and I know people are on the line, I understand. We ought to take just a minute and talk about the fact that the sales are going to start coming up now. Really caveat emptor. Let the buyer beware. Sorry, I didn't mean to throw Latin right in there for you. The reality is that you've got a lot of places that you know locally, like Steve's shop and Dave's shop and a couple of other places that you know have longevity and are locally well-known. And then you've got all these shows that are coming through and all these other things. And if you start buying from them, really expect nothing. Many of them are very, very, many of them are local people. Buy from them, there's no question. But many of them are also very honorable, good people. But this is also a venue for people who are not honorable and not good. So be very careful what you buy, when you buy it, and where you buy it.
And you're going to start getting fake emails about your order. And click here to verify your order.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, never click anywhere. If something says your eBay order or your Amazon order or whatever, go by hand to Amazon, log into your account, and check your order.
But if you haven't ordered anything,
see, there's that panic and confusion. You get an email, you know, your $300 order at Joe's Discount Furniture is ready to process. I didn't order anything from them.
As long as you know you didn't order anything or do anything with that particular company, delete it.
Right.
It's the safest thing to say.
So be very careful of that stuff. All right, have we got time for a call? Yes, we do. All right, our next caller is Chris from Rochester. Welcome, Chris.
Got a wireless. I got two laptops, a Gateway and a HP with Vista on it, Home Premier. And I replaced my wireless router with the new Netgear. I don't think it's that new. The Netgear 10X by 10X, the Range Max. I'll make a really long story short. Got it up and running with no problem, but cannot access my mail using Thunderbird. Talked to Netgear. I was on the phone with them for 3-4 hours. Talked to a senior technician. They had no idea, said the router was bad. I'm on my third one. I was just wondering if you guys had any suggestions.
What machine are you trying to access it with? The one that has XP or Vista?
The one, actually, it's funny because my wife's got Outlook, and that's the XP machine. She can't access mail either on hers. And then I have on mine, which is the HP with Vista on it. And I can't access Thunderbird.
The mail with Thunderbird.
Yes.
Yeah.
I can go directly to Rochester webmail, check my mail, no problem. If I disconnect the router, hook it direct from the modem to the laptop, I have no problem.
Sounds like the security in the router might be set too
right,
high.
It sounds like port 25 is closed.
We opened up port 25, 110, and then we did the trigger porting. And disabled the firewall on the router, disabled the Norton firewall, Windows firewall, disabled all security, and still was having the same problem.
Oh, you've got Norton on there?
Yep. I totally disabled Norton and still had the same problem.
All right, here's one thing you can try. Now, is Norton on both machines, your wife's and yours?
Yes.
All right, here's what you can do. Try it on this one. I know it's going to take a little time, but try uninstalling the Norton. I'm one of the machines, say the XP machine.
Sure.
And try going in and getting it then. I got a feeling Norton just wants to take over everything, and even just disabling it sometimes just doesn't do it by uninstalling it. You know, I mean, you're not going to go checking anything, just see if you can get to your email, so you're not going to get anything that way.
Sure.
Just try that and see if that solves your issue.
Okay, I appreciate it.
I mean, then if it does, then you can do the other. And like I say, we at the Security Tango recommend like Zone Alarm, which doesn't take over your whole machine. Norton like wants to control everything.
Right, and my wife's laptop, I have Zone Alarm on there.
Well, but that's in addition to the
yeah.
Right. All right, we got to take a break. Back in just a couple minutes with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, Chris Wright, Jessica Sawyer, me, Nick Francesco, and you. It's 48 minutes after the hour. It's Soundbites on 1180 WHAM. Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
I'm Steve Ray.
I'm Chris Wright.
And I'm Jessica Sawyer.
And at 52 minutes after the hour, it's Soundbites. Archandra in the chat room had an excellent point. If when we were talking to our caller, Chris, who was having problems with mail, if the mail is IMAP, then you need to open port 993. So POP is whatever we were talking about, but IMAP is 99325.
And if they're using secure versions, you know, secure IMAP or secure right. POP, those are different ports yet.
Right. So you have to be aware of what you're doing before you know what port to open. Transferring files from your digital video camera to your computer will happen in an instant as USB enters a new generation. USB 3.0 is going to be, USB is the most successful interface in the history of computing. Last year, 2.1 billion USB connections, over 6 billion units sold. But it looks like next year, it's going to be much faster. They're saying that they don't have a final thing, but they're saying a 27 gigabyte file, which now takes about 14 minutes to download, will take 70 seconds. So they haven't finalized the speed yet, but it's going to be much faster, much more energy efficient, and that'll be kind of nice. Equally importantly, I have to say, there's an Australian, a fellow in Australia, who just got his PhD in electromagnetic interference by figuring out an algorithm that drops that electromagnetic interference that slows down ADSL connections. Right now, ADSL services are somewhere between 1 and 20 megabits per second, depending on how far away you are from the central office. He says he can get the speed closer to 100 megabits per second. And it's just with the algorithm he uses. So it's likely that in the next couple of years, and it won't happen immediately. It'll take a couple of years to commercialize. But according to this, it looks like we'll soon be seeing much, much faster DSL services, which appreciate it to be faster. All right, our next caller is Sandra from Penfield. Welcome, Sandra. What's your question?
Yes, I'm running, I have a Dell machine running XP.
Yep.
And I am in safe mode, and I'm running AVG, and I came up with a worm, and status is it's infected, versus backup copy, and healable, it says no. You want to know the name of the worm?
Well, here's what I don't need the name of the worm, but what you can do with that is, by it's not healable means it's somewhere in your backup.
Okay.
If it gives you a file name.
It does.
You can go in and simply delete that file. Write that down.
SYSLIB.DLL.
What is it?
SYSLIB.DLL.
But if it's in the restore, what she wants to do is return off. Because if it's out there, the restore will just replace it. The restore files are protected. So you have to turn off your restore files, reboot, and then...
It has been turned off. I've never turned it back on.
Okay. So you should be able to delete that file now if it's still there, and it won't recreate it.
Do you use a program called Sticky Note from Tenbrol Software?
No, I don't.
Because that is a valid DLL file programs.
No, I have Spybot running, AVG, Super Anti-Spy, CW Shredder, and what one doesn't pick up, the other one does. So they're great programs.
Right, yeah, but Sticky Note is like a Post-it note program for your computer.
Nope.
Yeah. So go ahead and try to find that file and delete it now.
Oh, okay.
Right. And
is there a delete command inside of your program?
It says it's 20 gigabytes.
Well, if you do a search, you should find the file.
There you know it's bad, yeah.
Yeah, you can search for the file, start, search all files or folders, put in the name, look in the local hard drive or my computer, whichever one it shows you, and hit search. You'll find syslib.dll. Just highlight it and hit the delete button.
You may need to turn on invisibles and system files.
Or hidden.
If it's in a hidden folder.
Also, I have a question. How do I reload the Resident Shield and email that it's in a red box with an exclamation? It's not loaded.
I don't know that program. What?
It's in the AVG security status.
Well, you would turn any of that stuff on from the control panel in AVG itself.
Okay.
So you just bring that up and you'll be fine.
Do you have the free version of AVG or the pay version?
No, it's the free version.
Oh, you may not.
Yeah, Resident Shield, I think, only comes with the pay version.
Okay. Okay, great.
There you go.
Okay, thank you so much.
Yep. Thank you very much. Our next caller, I think we've got enough time for Roger from Rochester. Quickly, Roger.
Okay, I was just wondering how to get rid of those pop-up help things that come up over your taskbar every once in a while, or at least control them.
Pop-ups?
Those little...
Stop using Internet Explorer.
Yeah, but it just comes up in, you know, like you got a new program, or you got this or that or the other.
Well, some of them are legitimate. If you're getting it with that sort of thing, you can't really... Are you running Vista?
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I have never been more annoyed than I am with all the
it lets you,
junk inside of Vista.
You can't turn sideways or click on anything without it giving you some type of warning.
I know it. The
which is a pain in the butt.
It keeps doing it, though.
Yeah, you've got to go in and it's... See, I got to play around with it more, but my Vista box is out
it's
of the shop right
annoying.
Now.
Terribly annoying. I mean, it used to do it with XP, and I have XP also, or my wife does.
But you can turn it on.
Not, it's not nearly as annoying as this.
Oh, I know. No, it's, there are settings in there. You just got to go in under the security and that, and you can turn all that.
But we haven't unfortunately run enough of that stuff yet.
Yeah, I don't
know
either.
I apologize.
That's okay. You know, I'll look around myself.
All right, excellent.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. We have to go. I want to apologize to everyone to whom we did not get call earlier and more often. Thank you for everybody who called in. I want to thank everybody in the forums because they were terrific, giving us the help we needed and chit-chatting with themselves. It was kind of nice. I want to thank Dave Enright, Steve Ray, Chris Reich, who ably, once again, has generously donated his time and his effort and his equipment to produce the wonderful archives. And, of course, Jessica Sawyer, who is ably keeping us on track and ready to go and standing in for... Rob Linton.
Rob who?
It's Soundbite.